Tired of the hassle and risks of manual fruit cutting? Let me introduce our partners over at Supercut System, the automated solution that enhances safety, quality, and efficiency. Cut up to 120 perfect citrus wedges per minute, 6 times faster than manual. Patented technology delivers consistent slices, reducing waste and eliminating plastic. The contactless hygienic design lowers contamination risk and workplace injuries. Supercut integrates seamlessly for any volume, improve profitability and customer experience. Experience the power of automation with Supercut. Get started today at supercut.com and be sure to ask about their risk-free trials.
Elevate your dining experience with Rack Porcelain USA. As the exclusive tableware brand for the Walk and Talk podcast, Rack combines exceptional craftsmanship with innovative design. Whether you're a chef, a restaurant owner, or a food enthusiast, Rack's high-quality porcelain products will enhance every meal. Discover the artistry of food presentation and make every dining occasion special. Visit RackPorcelain.com today and see how Rack can transform your table. Chefs and food buyers, let me tell you about a product that will generate new excitement on your menu. Fully cooked, pasture-raised, all-natural Australian lamb from Aussie Select. Their award-winning, handcrafted, innovative products are blended with the finest spices and amazing flavors. Options include agave rosemary, tikka masala, lamb pastrami, and lamb prime rib roast. Available sliced or whole with a long shelf life too. Find out more at AussieSelect.com.
Hello, food fam. This is the Walk and Talk podcast, where you will find the perfect blend of food, fun, and cooking knowledge. I'm your host, Carl Fiadini. Welcome to the number one food podcast in the country. We're recording on site at Ibis Images Studios, where food photography comes alive and I get to eat it. Here's a humble request to give a follow on Instagram at Walk and Talk Show. Please and thank you. Tired of manual fruit cutting? I know I am. Try Supercut System, an automated solution that cuts 120 citrus wedges per minute. With consistent slices and a hygienic design, it enhances safety and efficiency. Improve your operations at supercut.com and ask about risk-free trials. Today, we're excited to have Chef Cynthia Romstock, executive chef at Colonial Country Club in Fort Worth, Texas, and a native of Asheville, North Carolina. Cynthia is a 2-time gold medalist in ACF pastry competitions and was named to Resort and Chef Magazine's 2024 40 Under 40. She's also been selected for the prestigious 2025 U.S. Culinary Open, where she will showcase her talents alongside 11 other top culinarians. And the Walk and Talk podcast will be there to capture everything. But first, let's get into what John shot today with Peninsula Food Services and also chef Kurt Hicken. He cooked up a couple of doozies. Kurt, welcome back. And dude, you got the chops.
Thank you.
You really do. You didn't lose a step. I know you haven't been in the kitchen and, you know, you haven't been in the industry like that in a while. But dude, you throw it down.
Thank you.
Yes. Okay. Let's talk about what you did today. You dirty, dirty dog. What did you do today?
We did a crispy Cantonese pork belly with kimchi and a buckthorn berry sauce. The trick with the crispy Cantonese pork belly, basically it's like a chicharrón, but cut into a larger steak size. It's got that rich flavor to it, but you're going with a spicy kimchi. And buckthorn berry is a tart berry that we mixed with a little ginger and syrup. They complement each other very well, I believe. And then we did that as well with a juniper berry dusted bone-in 20-ounce Creekstone ribeye with some fennel roasted potatoes and some king pine cone jam. Very unique ingredient. It's a European forest dish. And the pine cone jam is a Russian ingredient. Little mini pine cones that you boil in water until they become edible, essentially.
Kurt, hold on. I want everyone to understand something. It's a pine cone, okay? It's a pine cone, except they're little baby pine cones. So it's like maybe the size of the tip of a pinky or something like that. And they're soft and flavorful. And I've never seen anything or heard of that in my life. You know, in my mind, growing up, I've always wondered, like, wow, what, you know, like, can we eat pine cones? Like, I think every kid probably ever, you know, maybe thought of that, but you can. And we did today. So I just, you know, people need to know that.
It's a unique ingredient, definitely. And it most commonly used with a dessert item. But, you know, I would use it personally with a venison or a beef item, something you can bring that hearty flavor out and accent it, because it's sweet, like a glaze. I like the ingredient. It had brought a lot to the steak, I think.
What you picked today in terms of ingredients with the profile layers was right on.
Thank you.
Again, like lately I've been saying this, these chefs have been telling me on the phone, hey, we're going to do this, that, and whatever. And as they're telling me, I'm like, I don't know. In my mind, I'm like, I don't know how that's going to work out. I have faith in the people who we work with, because everyone is a abject professional and badass in their own way. So today was one of those days. And here it is again. I'm just blown away. Thanks. And naturally, and you saw, I mean, you know, you're here while we're doing the film work and John's doing the photography. You saw what this guy does. You see what he does.
It's amazing. I mean, he brought elevated the caliber of the plate completely.
I just don't know how the hell you did pine cones today, man. Like, and you know, it's funny because on the table where we're sitting, you know, holding the podcast, there's a dish of actual pine cones, you know, just for show. And it's a little apropos. I think that was terrific. You brought something else today, the borscht.
Oh, I brought some borscht. My wife is Russian, and she had been promising Carl some borscht for quite some time. And when I called him to tell him I had borscht, that's when he asked me to come to the show. So I think it was kind of a trick.
Yeah.
Just to get the borscht.
I was like, you know what? I don't know if this guy's going to make anything good, but I know that borscht is going to be good. wifey, thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. I'm totally digging it.
Yeah,
it was interesting. All right. And I ate the whole thing too. Like I slurped down the entire.
I think you did.
Yes. I did.
I don't think you shared any.
No, I didn't. There might be some. All right. But before we move on and introduce Chef Cynthia, before that, what gave you the inspiration for the pine cone dish specifically? Like, what were you thinking about to put that together?
It was a combination of things. My wife, a big part of it. You know, I love to learn different foods, and being married to a Russian person, their culinary is like their alphabet. It's grossly different than ours. So I look at the things that she has. And then when I saw it and I tasted it, and I thought, well, this is very wintry. It's got to have something strong winter flavor. And then the weather outside was cold and changing. I said, you know, if we could have a piece of bison or a piece of beef or venison, you know, a nice, hearty, large cut piece of meat, this would be perfect with it. And then, you know, I'm trying to find something to taper between the flavors. So that's where the juniper berry came in, was a middle, kind of like a gin flavor. Between the spice, the sweet glaze, and the hearty flavor of the beef.
Well, we landed on that bone-in creased-on ribeye, which, you know, I don't think is any slouch. That's pretty amazing. Well,
that too. Was an amazing cut of meat.
Yeah, it was pretty. Okay. Well, I just one more time want to say thank you. That was really great what you did today.
Absolutely. Thank you.
I think I might have you back.
I can do that.
Okay. All right. This NAFM show in February in Atlanta, where the U.S. Culinary Open will be held, this competition, cooking competition. Super, super excited. We're going to have the whole Walk and Talk media team at this event. Photography, videography, the podcast, and it's going to be amazing. We are the official podcast for this event, and we're just really fortunate to partner with these guys and over at NAFM as well. Thank you, Chef Nick and Chef Polly, because you keep us plugged in and we appreciate that. So I just wanted to put that out there, everybody. And without now further ado, Chef Cynthia, welcome to the program.
Well, hello, everyone. Thank you for having me.
My pleasure. You know, we had a really great conversation last week leading up to this, our pregame powwow. So thank you for that. Are you excited about all this or what? I mean, you have to be excited, right?
It's really starting to hit me. I mean, I want to say that I'm getting sleep, but my brain is just turning all the time. The good part is we actually had to turn in our final menus a couple days ago. So the conceptual piece is done. At this point, we can't change anything that we've submitted. If we do, we have to have approval. Knowing that I know what I'm doing now, I know what dishes I'm doing, and that doesn't change, that helps me sleep a little. I'm getting pretty excited.
That has to be a truckload of pressure off of your shoulders. And what I mean is,
it really is,
right? Because in the end, you've got this situation where, what am I going to cook? How is it going to work? What am I doing? And I think that's probably the biggest question mark, because you've been cooking for a long time. Like, you know what you can do. So let me ask you this. This I've asked so far, I've had a handful of the other competitors on the program, and I ask everyone the same thing. You've got beard chefs, Michelin chefs, you've got Food Network winners. Does that change how you approach this competition? Does that affect you on your psyche in any way?
Initially, yes. I started looking at everyone I was competing against. I'm like, oh man, when I started thinking of ideas, I was trying to be like them almost. And I had to take a step back and be like, you know what? You've made it this far based on who you are. I really want to represent myself and my own style in this competition and kind of just remain an individual and not follow in anybody's footsteps necessarily. But yeah, it's a lot to take in. It's a lot of pressure, and seeing who all I'm up against is pretty cool. Actually, I'm really excited to see everything that they make.
Yeah, I'm super excited for this too. Obviously, I'm an eater and this is like right up my alley. What are you doing to prep for this competition? How are you training for this?
So we're doing full-blown practice rounds, start to finish, just like we would be in the arena kitchen, trying to perfect our timing, perfect every move that we're making as far as efficiency and sanitation. The Comi that I have is just fantastic. She's a little fireball like me, and we're just totally grooving to the point where we don't even have to talk. She's handing me tools like I'm a surgeon and she's my nurse assistant, and like, we're not even talking to each other. It's like silent service, and she knows my next step, and it's really cool. And the more and more we practice, the better and better it gets. So
we've
probably got another 5 or 6 full practice rounds scheduled before the big day.
Is this somebody that you've worked with in the past?
Yes, she does work for me. Mm-hmm. She's one of my line cooks here. Okay, so I've worked with her for about a year and a half now.
Yeah, you've already got built-in camaraderie. Like, you already got the system.
I know. Yeah, I'm really fortunate. I mean, that we do have that age parameter. Our Comi has to be under the age of 23. I have one person that qualified, and I couldn't ask for a better person. So she's killing it.
Yeah, I mean, 23, that leaves me out by like a couple of decades. Yeah, that's terrible. Let's talk James Beard Foundation dinners. You've done a couple of them, and I have to believe that in and of itself, that has to be nerve-wracking. Am I wrong?
No, you're not wrong. Where I work, Colonial Country Club has been selected for the last 2 years to host the Friends of James Beard benefit for the state of Texas, which is obviously, a huge validation for the legacy that Colonial has and the reputation for quality that we have. And so being a part of that entire process, I mean, it's months of planning, was just so cool to be able to network with restaurant chefs that I wouldn't usually have the opportunity to work with, local industry leaders, other vendors, and just the foodies that bought tickets to come. I mean, it was an incredible experience. We had almost 300 people here that bought a ticket for a 5-course meal. And before that, we had 20 local chefs doing different activation stations during the cocktail hour. So, hosting that and putting it on from start to finish was a big task, but it was a ton of fun at the same time.
I intend to go to one of these dinners at some point. I feel like there's one coming up here in Jacksonville or St. Augustine, mm-hmm. one of the two. I got to check that out.
Being a country club chef and being able to be accepted into that world or be a part of that world, it's almost like a career defining moment. It's very unique. I don't know that it'll ever happen again. And it's just really cool to be a part of.
Well, the foundation itself, it's a pretty cool, they do a lot of great things. What you're doing at the US Culinary Open with your Comi, female executive chef, a lot of things are changing in the industry. And the Beard Foundation is there for it. How do you feel the landscape is changing for women in culinary roles?
I do see more and more women in this executive chef position, which I love to see. I mean, I'm still seeing a lot of young chefs be savory chefs, young females being savory chefs. I think the industry in its entirety, you know, has a fair amount of challenges and disadvantages when it comes to work-life balance and burnout. It doesn't necessarily discriminate against gender, but I think, you know, men and women both bring different and unique traits and values to the table. And at the end of the day, as long as we're putting our strengths forward for the betterment of the team, you know, that's what it's all about.
You know, what I thought was really great, you won those two ACF pastry events. And I mm-hmm. asked, I said, are you then a pastry chef that became a savory exec, or how did that work? And you said, no, I'm a savory chef and I happen to know a little bit of pastry. And I think that would be considered like a nail in the coffin of the old kind of guard in that regard.
Oh yeah, totally. Yeah, I think part of being a female in the beginning of my career, I was pushed more by my chefs to work towards the bakery or on the bakery side of things. And it did take some time for me to earn my chops in the kitchen. I can remember being on a grill station for 4th of July at Cherokee Town and Country Club in Atlanta, Georgia. We're cooking for, I want to say, like 4,000 people. I was 20 years old. And there's probably 15, 20 grills lining down this putting green. And I'm looking around and I'm like, I'm the only chick out here. You know, I'm the only one flipping burgers on 4th of July that's a female. And I look at Chef Walker and I'm like, I'm the only girl. And he's like, you're not a girl, you're a chef. And ever since that day, I was like, oh, okay, just a chef, y'all.
Yeah, and you're working grill. Usually got you in the garmanger or something like that. You know what I mean? So that's
exactly,
amazing.
Yeah.
And, yeah. You know, I just want to make a mention too. So I've done a lot of business with chefs in general, from country clubs to independents to corporate, whatever. And when you're talking about country clubs, that's that's like old school. It isn't yeah. like some, you know, indie restaurant somewhere and it's, you know, hip, you know, kind of everybody's tatted up on their forearms with, you know, knives and pigs and whatever. It's everything is different in the club. And it's, I don't want to say it like that, but at the end of the day, what you did to get to where you are should be commended and is really amazing.
Well, you know, it's 2025 and I tell the guys in the men's grill, I'd walk right in there. Like, you're eating my food. It's 2025. I think I can come in here now. And I do. I mean, I was, you know, raised by a single dad and I have three brothers and I'm just, you know, comfortable talking to guys and, you know, they're dressed.
True story. Hey, listen, I don't want any trouble over here, Cynthia. Okay. I don't want any trouble, chef. I don't want any trouble. What inspires you? Like, what cuisine is it that brings you passion and how are you going to take that passion into the U.S. Culinary Open?
Well, I've learned a lot about Latin cuisine having moved to Texas. Like you said, I'm originally from North Carolina. I didn't grow up with a lot of culture. I grew up on a dirt road in the mountains. You know, my parents made hamburger helper and tuna helper and shake and bake pork chops growing up. So, you know, pretty much as soon as I got my license, I started driving to downtown Asheville. I started really venturing out. You know, everyone in my family thinks I'm kind of crazy because I'm the only one that's moved out of North Carolina. I've always been interested in different foods, and it's just been a really, really cool experience, especially with the staff that I have here, learning about their cuisine. The Latin flavors, you know, they're just so bold and fresh and vibrant. They really do inspire me. And so, of course, we do our Tex-Mex, but we do a fun version of elevated comfort food with some Latin flair as well. But I always tell people too, you know, I'm pantry inspired. I like to just create with things that I'm surrounded by. That's kind of how my granny taught me how to cook growing up. She raised me till I was 12. All I remember is having a refrigerator that's full of condiments. And somehow she would put out like the 5-course meal every night. And I'm like, I don't even know where that came from. So now I kind of feel like that.
Yeah, but I'm not going to let you off the hook on the question though. Like, all right, so let me put it like this. What are you cooking at home? Like, what's your go-to? But then if you go out to eat, what are you ordering?
Well, if I'm cooking at home, I'm probably making some kind of taco.
Okay.
Or tostada. And if I'm going out to eat, I am Ooh, well, I'm always getting dessert. That is for sure. And a margarita.
All right. So we're so all going to
the beginning and the end.
We're all hanging out. I'm just saying.
I love Vietnamese food. I love really fresh flavors, fresh produce, the crunchy bean sprouts. I mean, the Vietnamese food is right up my alley. Even when I lived in Atlanta, there's just so many great places for Vietnamese food. So that's probably my favorite cuisine of all time.
Every single, I'm going to say 19 out of 20 chefs are going to pick an Asian cuisine as their favorite, whether it's Korean or Vietnamese. You
know, there's a lot of French influence in Vietnamese food. So you could say French as well.
I guess, you know, I guess you could say that.
They have their baguettes and their pâtés and.
Yeah. And I'm not, you know, who's going to judge? Who would judge such a thing? So we know what your favorites are. How are you bringing that into the competition?
My menu is definitely progressive flavors, starting with the appetizer and leading into the entrees. I feel that they're very unique. I feel that what I'm bringing to the table is a nice blend of visual artistry, unexpected flavor combinations and textures. You know, there's definitely a lot of balance when it comes to everything on the plate, from, you know, from the fat, the salt, the flavors, the look of everything, the textures of everything, the colors, and trying not to repeat that in each course, but making sure that all three still tell the same story. So I'm really proud of the menu that we've created. We put a ton of time into it. I do want to keep it a secret. I don't want anybody to know what my theme is right now, but I do have a very specific theme for my menu, and I'm really, really excited to showcase it.
So you came to win this thing. Your goal is to walk away with a victory, right?
We all have a chance. I don't want to sit here and say that anybody's better than the other. We all have a chance at this thing. I think it's going to come down to tens of points. I really do. I think it's going to be a really close competition. It's going to be harder for the judges than it is going to be for the participants. I'm so excited to see what everybody does, and I'm really excited to be a part of it. And just to be on the same level as everybody, just to be considered on the same level as everybody is really, really validating and exciting.
I'm so motivated by competitions. I wish I was, I don't wish I was a chef. I don't wish that I grew up in the kitchen. I was in the front of the house and it was a different life. With that said, these competitions, I wish I can be involved in them because it's exciting to me. You know, we have chefs that come through here at the studio every week and we get to see all sorts of amazing dishes and different creations. Different inspirations and passions from all the different personalities, right? I would love to get all these guys and gals together and do a competition walk and talk style. That would be amazing because then at least I could be a part of the thing. You know what I mean? That would be pretty. You're looking at me, Kurt, right?
That would be something. That would be something.
You want to jump in?
That's a great idea.
You want to get on that? Yeah, you guys want it? You down too? I mean, listen, I know you got all your work ahead of you here for the US Culinary Open, but I mean, maybe we could put that together.
Yeah, I've got all the time in the world.
I can give you some recipes. That was a joke.
Yeah, of course it was. You know,
I'll take any help I can get.
No, see, Kurt's trying to get me in trouble over here somehow. That's what
he did it to me last week. So
that's true. Okay. Well, you deserve it.
I just wish I was there to try your food today because it all sounds amazing.
Wait till you see the pictures. I'm not sure how much everybody follows along. You know, all the participants who are in this competition, everybody's very busy. And we appreciate the time that you cut out for us on the podcast here. But I have to tell you, because everyone is so busy, I am not sure how much of our content everyone has been able to consume. When you go and scroll our Instagram and, you know, to go kind of check out what we do here and what John does specifically, it's pretty amazing. This guy is probably in the top 5 food photographers in the country. And I mean that. And I'm not, you know, I have no reason to throw flowers at you. I'm staring right at him right now. I would never do that. I've known him for too long to give him any flowers. So he deserves this. And I feel like if people would see the end product, wow, there would be a line around the block over here. And that's what I told you, Cynthia. I said, I want to get you to the studio, man. I want to capture what you do and blow it up.
I would love that. And food photography is not easy. That is a very hard thing to do well. Chefs are trying to do it with their cell phones every day. Compared to what you do, it's like, oh my gosh, it's a totally different world.
It's funny. I follow a lot of chefs, obviously, on social. You know, you see what they do, and you can tell that these plates that they're putting out, that they're gorgeous. You can see it in their iPhone snapshot. You see that it's a really pretty dish. But then when you come to an actual studio and you see it executed properly with the right equipment and knowledge and all this stuff, you want to eat the photo. Mm-hmm. Let's talk legacies. What culinary legacy would you like to leave?
I'm in a fun new phase of my career where I just turned 36 and I'm to the point where I'm transitioning into being more of a mentor. I'm feeling that phase in my life kind of take over. So I'm experiencing for the first time really watching cooks develop, watching them become lead line cooks to sous chefs and watching them grow and develop, not only like in their cooking skills, but also in their maturity and their leadership and just being good people. That has been the most fun part of my entire career so far. It's just watching people grow up, developing people underneath me. And I also love teaching cooking classes here at the club, kids cooking classes. You know, when I was in high school, I worked at the Young Chefs Academy and did the little pizza birthday parties where I taught the kids how to make pizza. And I just love that element of the job where not only do I get to cook, but I also get to teach people. And it's just really fun.
I don't know that there's a better answer that a chef could provide. You want to pass on the legacy. You want to show people the correct ways of doing things. And maybe you can bridge a gap to some, you know, young up and coming culinarian. Instead of making all the wrong decisions and choices, you can possibly lead them and turn them into somebody who's going to lead the next generation down the road.
Absolutely. I couldn't agree more. I think that our job as chefs nowadays, it's a whole different world. And if we can inspire young people to come into the industry now, but come in with a different mindset, I don't want people to be scared of me as a chef. I don't want it to be the world where you're yelling and screaming, but instead the world where you're bringing people together and you're developing and you're coming up with ideas. And, you know, I love to learn things from my dishwashers and from other people, you know, below me and just change the mindset. I know there's chef shows that you see out on TV that, you know, there's a lot of yelling and screaming and throwing stuff around. That's not the impact we want to show as a chef. If the kitchen's crashing, diffuse it before it gets to the dining room. And if the dining room and the servers are crashing, diffuse it before it gets to the kitchen so we can bring that to a nice palate. And if we can instill that in our kids and then get them motivated to do this as opposed to get into it for money, because this is a great field and you can make a lot of money in it. But if you're doing it for the money, you're not going to make money. If you're doing it because you love it, then money's going to come.
Well said. Yeah. Cynthia, you agree?
Absolutely. 100%.
A lot of times, the people that we get in the kitchen, staff, and not even just the kitchen, the people who go work at restaurants traditionally have issues. Could be a number of things. But typically speaking, they end up working in the food business. And a lot of times those personalities are rough. And because they're rough, I think that as leaders, you need to be rough in order to control, and then you need to nurture. I don't know that you can start nurturing somebody who's already jagged. You know, somebody told me who's very successful, has led a lot of people. This is just a metaphor. But you have to bloody somebody's nose to get them to pay attention. But then you are the one that hands them the towel and the Band-Aid. And by doing that, they learn that there's consequences and that they have to listen. Now, I'm not saying that throwing pans at somebody is a good thing at all. But, I feel like the kitchen is still a rough place to be.
Well, I think it is. And I agree that you do have to be strong. But your strength can come in different ways. For me, I went through a pretty bad accident towards the end of my career, and that's how I got out of this. But I realized that I'm not saving lives. I'm cooking somebody's dinner. And so I don't have to yell at you. I can just send you home. You know, it's not like I don't know how to do your station and work it and do it better. And when you show that calm demeanor and that calm response to somebody when they're acting out of line, it resonates through your whole staff that this guy's no joke. I mean, like, he doesn't mind doing my job, and he can do it better than me. And I can't rattle him and get him mad. When you show that you're losing your temper, throwing things, getting mad, screaming, you've lost already because they got under your skin. Dude, you're nothing. Go home. I used to tell people when I worked in New Orleans, I had a couple of chefs want to take me outside and out back afterwards, but I said, take that chef coat off and put a dishwasher jacket on. And they hated that. I mean, like, no, dude, you're not a chef. Not acting, not cooking like that. You're not making stew. You're sauteing. So do it right or go put a dishwasher jacket on. You're not yelling at somebody. I guess you're subtly demeaning them in a way that puts them down in front of all their coworkers without you raising your voice and showing you're being a little upset by this. Instead, you're in control.
Chef Cynthia, thoughts?
Yeah, you know, I think my first instinct is to always hold somebody's hand or baby them, and then they're not going to learn anything that way. I do think it's good to let somebody essentially burn one time, you know, go down in flames. You know, it's good for a sous chef to have to go out and apologize to a member for an undercooked kid's burger. You know, that's how I got to where I am. That's what seasoned me. My chef never held my hand. I was responsible for everything that I prepared, and I had to answer to it. They have to go through the exact same thing. They have to get burned a couple times. They've got to learn their lessons the hard way. I'm there to support. Obviously, I want to prevent those situations as much as possible with training and with oversight. But eventually, you know, it does happen. We're in the human error business, and, you know, real life experience is the best way to learn.
And then carry yourself properly through the challenge. Well said. We're going to segue now into, John, you didn't know we're doing this today, but we're doing walk-in confessions. We're bringing it back. Yeah. Chef Cynthia. All right. So listen, being in the business, you get all sorts of things that happen. All right. There's cuts and burns and things that blow up and sharp knives. And it's not a pleasant place to be sometimes in the back of the house. Our segment, walk-in confessions, kind of talks and gets into some of those situations. And I know that you have some interesting things to say.
It was a Saturday afternoon. We had anywhere from $5,000 to $10,000 worth of beef tenderloin, crab, cans of crab, everything on the dumbwaiter coming up from the storeroom to the main kitchen. And we lose power and it trips the dumbwaiter and it's stuck in between floors. We're calling maintenance. We're trying to get in touch with somebody. No one's really available. I finally get in touch with one of the maintenance guys, but he's on vacation. He can't come fix it. And he's like, look, there's only one solution to this. If you need to get that food off of here right now, that's to hot wire the dumbwaiter. He's like, I'm going to talk you through it, but this is what you've got to do. You've got to take this one wire. You've got to touch the end, you know, one end to 19 and one end to 26 and yell down the hall for somebody to push the button while you're holding both the wires.
You're trying to land an airplane.
Exactly. It worked. We got food and I hot wired a dumbwaiter and I felt cool.
And then after your shift, you went hot wired a Toyota and you drove off into the sunset, right? Is that what happened that night?
Oh, yeah. Well, it wasn't a Toyota, but yeah.
Okay. I love it. Kurt, I know you must have a story.
I was running a Houston in Atlanta, and some guy came in with his girlfriend and or wife, actually, and they were having dinner and sitting at the table together. And, you know, I've got all my somewhat thuggish line cooks working, and they all think they're so tough and such. And the girl told the guy that she was, you know, seeing another guy. And the guy got up and pulled a gun and shot across the dining room. And I'm watching all these cooks hiding underneath counters and inside the dishwasher. Across the room in the dining room, there's a gunshot and you guys are hiding in underneath canned goods and behind stuff in my kitchen.
I would have went straight to the walk-in.
One guy I said, because that's where I went, is, you know, there's no way out. So if he comes back here, there's no way out. He goes, you know, if he came back here, you'd be stuck.
Okay. Yeah. True story. I mean, is this like a
serial? But the dumb guy that I am.
Was this a serial killer or was just like a rando?
It was a crazy, jealous husband.
Yeah. Straight to the walk-in.
This guy burned. But you don't know what it is. All you hear is a gunshot. You know, you're not at the table seeing who's shooting. You're just All of a sudden you hear a gunshot inside a nice restaurant and he's, what's, this is a little bit.
As long as you don't hear a whisper in your ear that says, hello, Clarice, I think you're okay.
So the police were there and they shot him over the top of this giant sphere that came. So it was a bit of gun. It was crazy for a Houston restaurant. It's a true story.
Well, no, I mean, listen.
It's all over the news.
Well, so first of all, Houston's is such a nice place.
Yeah.
It really is a beautiful place. No matter where you are in the country.
Well, the wildest part of the story, and this adds to the story, is you go in any other restaurant, and the art on the wall is just, you know, some cheap art. You go into Houston's, this sphere was weighed a couple tons and was flown in from Asia. It was $100,000 piece of art. And, you know, there's blood splatter all over it. And all the art on the walls is real art. And so this kind of experience inside a restaurant that's like that, it was, you know, this is no James Beard restaurant, but they just do really well at everything they do. And they don't cut any corners. They don't cut any corners in their decor, their food quality, and all that. So it was a pretty interesting.
Well, here's the plot twist. That sphere, that $100,000 piece of art, is now worth $2.5 million. Okay, there's your plot twist. Cynthia, I'm so appreciative of you giving us time, coming on the show, and kind of talking industry with us. How do people find you?
So I'm on Instagram. My handle is CCCCYNDFW. Of course, I have Facebook and LinkedIn, Cynthia Ronstadt, and that's it.
Everybody out there, go check out Chef Cynthia. She is a badass. And I can't wait for John to get a hold of the food you're going to be cooking up over at the NAFM show. It's going to be amazing. Kurt, how do people find you?
Hicken Kurt, with Kurt with a C, H-I-C-K-E-N-C-U-R-T.
All right, everybody, thank you very much today for being here and doing all that you do. John, Kurt, Chef Cynthia, you're all amazing. We are out.
Get ready to innovate and organize your workspace with Metro. As the industry leader in storage and productivity solutions, Metro is here to transform and organize your kitchen. With their premium solutions, you'll experience the Metro difference. Metro's sturdy and versatile shelving units, workstations, holding cabinets, and utility carts are designed to streamline operations and maximize your productivity. Don't settle for imitators. Metro products last longer and offer unparalleled quality and durability. Plus, many customization options ensure that your workspace is tailored to your unique needs. Visit their website or contact them today to start designing your perfect space. Metro Shelving, your partner in organization and efficiency.
Let me tell you about my friends over at Citrus America and their amazing juicing equipment. They're revolutionizing the way you enjoy freshly squeezed juice. They're at the best hotels, restaurants, and markets. Their mission is simple. Develop a unique consumer experience with on-premise juicing, deliver healthy taste options to clientele, and juice more faster. It's that easy. Citrus America supplies the highest quality juicing equipment and solutions in the industry. So whether you're a small business owner or a large corporation, Citrus America has the right juicing equipment for you. Find out more at citrusamerica.com.